Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello, and welcome to this special two-part episode on the PASIG Practice Pearls podcast. This is part one of the PAPT Fellowships, What's in the Box? My name is Isabella Skangmore, and I am a licensed physical therapist and orthopedic physical therapy resident. I will be joined in this episode by representatives from Harkness Center for Dance Injuries Postgraduate Performing Arts Physical Therapy Fellowship Program and the Performing Arts Fellowship at The Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. Please enjoy the episode and stay on the lookout for part two, where we will speak with Columbia University Irving Medical Center Westside Dance Physical Therapy Performing Arts Fellowship and John Hopkins Hospital Performing Arts Fellowships. From Harkness, we have Mark, Sarah, and Patty. Mark Hall, MPT, CSCS, has been providing physical therapy care for dancers and performers for over 23 years. Mark's affiliation with HCDI spans 20 of those years, during which he also owned a private orthopedic practice providing on-site PT at over 30 Broadway shows. He is currently the PT supervisor at Harkness and also serves as a PAPT fellowship coordinator. Mark is honored to have recently received the Alumni of the Year Award at his alma mater, Northwestern University Physical Therapy and Human Movement Sciences. Dr. Edery Altosh is a clinical specialist at Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, where she is an active in research and clinical education. She is currently in a PhD program at Seton Hall University's Department of Interprofessional Health Sciences program, and also enrolled in the University of Alberta's Graduate Certificate in Pain Management program. Previously, she was the PASIG Research Chair, and currently she is part of the task force for the PASIG's upcoming independent study course focused on aerial arts and the Practice Pearls podcast production manager. In addition, Dr. Edery Altosh is a former professional ballet dancer who danced as a member of both the Pennsylvania Ballet and the Boston Ballet. Dr. Patty Cavallari is a senior physical therapist at NYU Langone's Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, where she enjoys working with movers with a wide variety of backgrounds. She is a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist and completed Harkness's Performing Arts Physical Therapy Fellowship. In addition to clinical rehabilitation, she provides on-site care for Broadway productions and educational outreach to medical and performing arts communities. From Ohio State, we have Tiffany and Claire. Tiffany Morali, DPT, OCS, PhD, has been a performing arts medicine specialist at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center for 11 years. She is currently the director of the Performing Arts Fellowship at The Ohio State University and serves as the Fellowship Task Force Chair for the PASIG. Claire Such is the mentoring coordinator for the Ohio State University Performing Arts Fellowship. She also serves as faculty in the Ohio State Sports Residency and is not only a board-certified specialist in sports physical therapy, but also an athletic trainer.
Welcome, everybody. I'm very excited to have you all here on the podcast.
Thank you, Isabella. We appreciate it.
We are happy to be here.
This is my first time doing a podcast with this many people on, so thank you so much for learning with me as we do this. So let's jump right into the questions. Starting for Mark and Tiffany, what characteristics might differentiate one fellowship from another in deciding about what program is right for you?
Well, I'll go first. I'm not shy. I think that, like, as in real estate, location, location, location. And not to say that any one location is better than another, but I think it depends, one, where you live now, and, you know, some important considerations about what the cost of living is in the place that you're going to, if you have to relocate, and then what the actual opportunities are that are specific to the location that the fellowship is being provided in. I don't know if you feel the same way, Tiffany, but I think that, you know, New York can be a difficult place to move to, and it can be very expensive. So that could be one consideration, not to be negative about New York City, but it can be one consideration about coming here. But there's also, being a large metropolitan area, there's a lot of opportunities here to consider for the price you would have to pay, I think, for moving to Manhattan.
I agree. I think that's definitely one thing that applicants should consider. Something else is that with the different programs, there's four disciplines within performing arts, at least that the fellowship programs need to highlight. And that includes dance, music, figure skating, and gymnastics. And each program is going to have a different emphasis on the four different disciplines. Our program, for instance, is definitely dance heavy, and all programs will cover all four of those disciplines among others as well. But you should talk to the different faculty members and the directors to really learn about the program and see what would be the best fit for you. You don't have to be a dancer or a gymnast to complete one program versus another. You can have really any background in the performing arts, but just make sure that it's a good fit for what you want your future career goals to be.
Right. I would agree. You know, I think that's one of the goals as far as Harkness's therapy, performing arts therapy program, it has been over the last year that we noticed with Patty, is that we have therapists that have musical abilities and musical training here, but the musicians that we see typically are musicians that are coming from Broadway shows. So they're professional people that are playing in the orchestra. And we've been looking to get some more contracts with different schools and universities in the area so that we can get the younger professionals to try to see them. And I also, you know, we are very dance heavy here too, not a lot of gymnastics, but it's also, you know, you need to consider what type of dance you're going to be seeing. We see a pretty wide range of dancers here across the Broadway community and as far as professional dance companies. So, you know, I think a lot of it depends on what your own dance background might be and whether you're attuned to maybe broadening your horizon or you want to stay within the niche that you're comfortable with and what your actual professional training has been. The other thing that I was that's to consider here is cost about different programs. You know, being from a larger medical institution versus, you know, a college-based program, I don't know exactly how the program is run at Ohio State, but we have program fees here. We don't necessarily have tuition, and our applicants or our fellows are salaried at 85% of full-time employee here. So you do get full-time benefits along with being a salaried employee here at NYU for the fellowship.
So the different programs have either two options. I believe at all of the programs, all of the fellows receive full-time benefits. But some you are paid at a full 100% salary, 100% FTE, and then you pay tuition. And then others were similar to Harkness Dance Institute, where we pay at a certain percentage of a full-time salary, but then we don't charge tuition as well. And it's all of the programs make the cost of living comparable for what the fellow will receive.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the big choice is, what I'm finding with some of the people that I'm answering questions, that I end up answering questions before they fill out an application, is concerning, you know, where they're at in their career right now, what they're making as far as a salaried professional at this point in their careers, and what would it entail for moving and taking the risk of maybe taking a salary cut or something like that. So you have to weigh those things with the other opportunities and the network and the experience and the exposure to get to the population that makes taking that sort of a risk palatable.
And then what support and opportunities come from like a higher institutional level at your organizations?
So I can go first with this one. So we are affiliated with a large university and medical center. And I believe we have around 11 residencies and fellowship programs. So we actually have a director of residency and fellowship education. And we have a lot of support from our institution and we collaborate with all of our fellowship and residency directors. We have some shared curriculums such as leadership building and some kind of generic ability type education that we share among all the programs. So it's been good to rely on some of those other programs, and we bring in faculty from other programs. I know we have somebody who is part of our sports faculty, but she was a gymnast at a Division I school. So she comes in and teaches a lot of our gymnastics lectures and does a lot of our mentoring that way. So we've been able to support and grow the program through some of our institutional support.
It's very similar here at Harkness. I'm a coordinator. There's two new residencies. There's two new fellowship programs, ours and one other one. And then there's the residency programs that exist in the orthopedics department. But we too have regularly scheduled meetings that we share We're trying to standardize the curriculum and how it's presented and how we're doing online modules across the entire institution and residencies and fellowships. We also share information back and forth with the new manual therapy fellowship over at Langone Orthopedic Center. So it's very similar. We are a large institution. We don't have to worry. Like we were, you know, when COVID hit, we were very concerned that we would have the facility and the patient population to continue so that Patty would have the hours and the exposure that she needed to make sure that she with the residency or the fellowship would continue. And because of the feeder system that we have from the MD clinics that we run in our dance medicine department and from our other orthopedic doctors, that we were able to make sure that we had the patient population and the exposure that she needed to get the hours that she needed. So yeah, it's very good to be a part of a larger institution in that respect. And we also have the resources that our research, the overall research department in the hospital, and we have the ability to use some of those professionals over there to do lip searches and things like that. So we can move on with some of the other aspects of our research that we don't have to take so much time doing, you know, the initial collection of some of the information that we need.
Awesome. It sounds like your programs are both super supported by these massive institutions, which is really great to see. Moving towards our mentors, Claire and Sarah, what are the expectations and goals of the graduate fellow? What is the level of expertise expected upon graduation? And how is this different from a residency?
So the goals of a residency, Isabella, I think that you're well aware of what these are because you're about to graduate pretty soon. Are to develop, especially in an orthopedic residency, solid orthopedic skills, right? And to be able to apply the orthopedic knowledge to kind of different contexts. There's an expectation that the residents will also have really good patient management skills at all levels of recovery, so subacute, acute, chronic. And this is the type of physical therapist that we're looking for to come into our program. So this is actually a benchmark. So this is when we look at our CPI and how we benchmark things, we're looking at bringing in an entry level PT with solid orthopedic skills. And beyond that, then we use Patricia Benner's 5 stages of proficiency to describe the rest of the continuum, which is competent performing arts clinician, performing arts clinical specialist is the next level, and then moving up to performing arts expert clinician. So our expectation is at the end of the year long fellowship that our fellow will then be at performing arts clinical specialist level.
I would jump off of that. Sarah was right on the money. The expectations of a residency are first to specialize, right? You know, you're expected to be entry level by the time you get into a residency. You're expected to have passed your license exam, and you're in a residency for further mentoring to hone your skills. Yes, absolutely. A good fellow candidate would be someone who had solid orthopedic skills. I think that one thing that you do need and you learn in a performing arts fellowship is the typically it's on-field coverage, but on-stage coverage and event coverage skill set that if you're coming from a traditional orthopedic background, you may or may not have. If you have that sports or that athletic training type of background, that's another thing that you can continue to hone through the fellowship. But the residency would be to first specialize you in one way or another, whether that's orthopedics or sports. And then the fellowship takes you a step beyond that. So you're not just proficient. You don't just have good patient handling skills, like Sarah mentioned. You're not just a good, solid therapist who can apply what they know, take things to the next level, really help their patients meet their goals, but you now want to apply that specifically to performing arts. So that's where it would kind of take a turn. You have all those skills, but now you want to apply them to dancers and musicians and figure skaters and gymnasts. Definitely a process as you move through the fellowship, and you know, we can go through the different taxonomies and the different like formal benchmarks that we use, but every fellow is also a little bit different because everyone comes into every program with a completely different skill set and as a completely different human. So we also have to make sure that we meet you where you are and we tailor the program to you. Because if you don't have, for instance, that on stage experience or that event coverage experience, then we need to make sure that that's something that we develop in you and we make sure you feel confident by the end of the fellowship. If that's something you come in with, yes, we still help you polish that and hone that skill set, but it might not be where we focus the bulk of our time. So it's very, very tailored to you as an individual and your career goals and your skill set and what you want out of it, even more so than a residency. A residency will do that, but the fellowship will kind of take it to the next level.
Jumping off that, there are, like Claire said, multiple perspectives at a performing arts fellowship that we need to be able to run through. So we have our backstage coverage. At Harkness, we have these major Broadway shows and the fellow is there once a week where they see musicians, the crew and the cast. Then moving to like the next step where we might be referring somebody to our dance medicine clinic, the fellow would have an opportunity to shadow and listen to and collaborate with the surgeons, our primary care specialists, sports medicine physicians, and our DOs. And then beyond that, like they would understand where the surgical indications would come in next, and then beyond that, rehab. So there's kind of this whole spectrum that our fellows are able to see, and that allows for a lot of depth and breadth and the knowledge of their field. And this makes our fellow more fluid and more adaptable in their problem solving, which is wonderful. And that really gives them the opportunity to be able to go beyond and create these like new solutions, right? They're now the leaders of their field and they can contribute to research. They can see the gaps that exist and they can basically lead the performing arts profession forward.
I've been nodding along the entire time because we're right on the same page. This is exactly what we want in a fellowship. And I think that's an excellent point to bring up, that as a subspecialist, you are expected to become a leader in your field and in your subspecialty. And, you know, performing arts, it's creative. It's not going to sit in a box and always be exactly the same. Tendinopathy is tendinopathy, but tendinopathy in the Nutcracker is not tendinopathy, and Lord of the Dance is not tendinopathy playing the trombone or getting ready for the Olympic gymnastics team. So making sure that you can apply all of those different levels of knowledge, you can see the progression of something for one of your performers, even before it happens for them, even before you're even 100% sure what the actual issue might be, you can kind of see down the road and know how to guide them and help them manage that issue. That's one of those things that's really going to mark an individual as a leader and as a subspecialist and ostensibly someone who can be trusted by all of these performers. You know, that's why we're here. That's why we're developing this subspecialty. We want to build that trust and we want to build that care network.
Mentors, it's like you read my mind. You answered all my follow-up questions so beautifully in those first two. So we're all on the same page. That's awesome. One more question for the mentors. What are the primary goals within the mentoring session and how are mentoring sessions structured at your institution?
So we actually have a formal mentoring form that we fill out kind of for our, we'll call them like our daily mentoring sessions. And we have kind of larger, more in-depth forms that we'll fill out periodically when there's more of like a formal assessment. So we do, essentially it's a lab practical for an evaluation, a lab practical for a treatment, a lab practical for coverage, and those different types of scenarios where the fellow would be interacting with performers. So that's kind of the paperwork end of things. But the vast majority of the time for us, the mentoring is structured around the schedule and the fellow schedule and the appointments that they have with dancers or the coverage that they have for performances or practices and that kind of thing. Sometimes, you know, there's always informal mentoring in these programs. That's kind of one of the best hidden secrets about it. You get all of this extra informal mentoring and you develop these relationships with your faculty. But, you know, the dynamic is definitely, the dynamic of the appointment is definitely led by the fellow and the mentor is there and involved, but, you know, as a good mentor, you're not really going to sit there and dictate what they do or tell them what to do or how to do it. You're there to make sure they're being an adult learner who can develop themselves and become this subspecialist that we want them to be. And then typically, you know, we'll jump in or we'll ask a question or we'll pull the fellow aside just to like have a discussion or like, hey, did you know this technique is something you could apply here? Or I know you haven't had this didactic portion, but you're going to go through all of these articles and these are some kind of pearls that we'll pull out there. So it might be a good idea to apply this with this individual now. And then we'll kind of come back at the end and have a little discussion about how things went and what could be pulled away from it. And that's kind of the step-by-step of how we do most of our mentoring.
So at Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, we use a lot of different mentoring models and we're all very eclectic in our approaches because we all have different experiences. But in Patty's year, we had three different mentors and we all took the APTA course for successful mentorship, for residency and fellowship education. And we all used the same 2-hour format, including pre-charting, seeing 2 to 3 patients, and then 30-minute debrief one time a week. And then hopefully we'd be able to get some skills practice. And then, of course, 2 to 3 patient care visits would be either an eval and a follow-up or 3 follow-up visits. But we all have different backgrounds. All the mentors have different backgrounds, and that influences our mentoring styles. So as a mentor, I see myself as a colleague first, and then also as a facilitator of clinical learning. And I like to provide ongoing assessment and feedback. And there is any number of strategies to be able to do this. So, but for me, I'm in a PhD program where my advisor graduated from Columbia University's Teachers College, and her expertise is in clinical reasoning. So I feel lucky to have been mentored myself in teaching and learning strategies from her. And at Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, I find that I can apply the community of practice, idea of the community of practice very well to engage a fellow or even a student or observer. A community of practice is a group of people who share a concern for something that they do, and they learn how to do that something better. And they do this by exploring ideas together and by acting as sounding boards for one another. And Harkness Center for Dance Injuries has a long-standing and strong community of practice. And then another teaching strategy I find very helpful, and Patty and I found very helpful together in mentoring, is mind mapping. So mind mapping is basically just drawing a diagram, and the diagram has a central theme. I would let Patty or the fellow pick that central theme from the patient management model in physical therapy. So either the interview, the exam, the evaluation, the plan of care, the interventions, the re-examination, or the outcomes would be the central theme. And then there would be a peripheral subcategories coming off of that. And I would be very lenient like how that is represented, because I wanted to see what was best represented her thoughts. So clinical reasoning is not linear. So I think it helps facilitate more conceptual thinking. And it really helped me to be able to get the inside out so I could see conceptual thinking what types of scaffolding had occurred already, or if there were missing links that maybe needed to be filled in terms of knowledge, or just kind of linking two thoughts together that can become a larger conceptual idea. And so I find those two things, community practice and mind mapping, to be essential in my mentoring. We also use speak alouds and reflective journaling and the ICF model as a means of communication, but the first two I find really, really meaningful in my mentoring.
Awesome. Patty, I see you nodding along as Sarah was talking about that. So I'll bring in our next question directed towards you. Since you went through a fellowship, would you say fellowship is worth it?
So in one word, definitely. It's a long year in many ways of just like, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but it's totally worth it. Like I grew so much as a clinician, as a colleague, as a health professional, being able to work so closely with other dance medicine providers that weren't PTs, that were surgeons, physicians, acupuncturists specializing in this field. I just learned so many different ways of communicating and what are different ways that people may look at the same patient I'm working with. So that way we can really strive to provide the best care for the patient.
What are the employment opportunities for fellows after completing the fellowship program?
I can start with this one. So at Ohio State, we've had three fellows complete our program. All three of the fellows initially started by being hired on to our medical center and joined as fellowship faculty. We have a lot of different partnerships. So there's a professional ballet company, our Department of Dance, School of Music, and a lot of the local dance schools and gymnastics facilities in the Columbus area that we partner with. So we always have opportunities to bring on more, more faculty and more clinicians that have that performing arts specialty. Two still remain at Ohio State, and one, actually her husband was in the military, so she's living in Guam, but has started her she works at a private practice out there, but it's kind of started her own dance medicine practice out there. So we're proud of her and the opportunities she has taken. When a fellow is in our program, I always work with them to help meet what their career goals are. We're able to kind of tailor the curriculum, but really try to work with them and work with any of the connections that we have to try to get them into any job that they may want, whether it's local to Columbus or across the country with some of our connections. The performing arts community is pretty small. A lot of us know each other through the fellowship programs and through some of our other involvements in professional organizations. So we can try to help get them where they want to be.
I will say I was lucky enough to be offered and able to accept a position to stay on full-time at Harkness after I completed my fellowship. So I was a staff therapist and I've been recently promoted to senior physical therapist. And so I am there full time treating patients in the clinic on site and helping with a lot of our educational outreach opportunities and getting my feet wet with more research as well.
That's awesome. Congratulations. And excellent segue into our next question. We'll start with Sarah Mark. What are the research opportunities at Harkness that Patty has mentioned, and how are they structured, and what are the expectations for them?
That was one of the interesting things that happened. Patty was our first fellow to go through. She ended up doing an amazing job with her capstone project, which was rolled into her research requirement in that she selected a patient from our dance clinic that she followed through her rehab process. And it was an Ehlers-Danlos hypermobility syndrome shoulder patient that she wrote up a case study for that's since been accepted for publication for JOSPT. So what we did was looked at that situation, and I think that we have a year for our program, and we do have a large number of patients that come through the dance clinic, and we kind of decided that it might be an interesting thing to sort of standardize what we're doing for research and have our fellows come in and in the first month or so or month and a half with their interests in mind, select patients to follow from the dance clinic that they would then narrow down to one or two patients that they would end up doing a case study for, and then with that opportunity to present that to the group as a capstone project, and then write it up with the help of our research team here to be presented or for publication. And well, Patty, you can tell them you had not only just that, but you were selected for several other opportunities to present as a poster and a few other things for CSM. So it ended up being a great way to get not only Harkness's name out there, but the accomplishments of our fellow in the course of 1 year and being able to do that. And also Sarah has taken up the responsibility of then writing a research handbook so that the fellow that's coming in can hit the ground running and they know what deadlines that will be throughout the course of the year so that they can keep ahead of schedule and make sure that they come in at the end of the year with something that's been reviewed by the staff here and gone through all the processes here that's necessary in the hospital to get a research paper published or a project.
Yeah, we were able to capitalize on that good work that Patty did in conjunction with her research mentors. And you know, like being accepted into JOSPT is not an easy task, and it happened nice and seamlessly for us. We worked really well together, so I was able to go back and start documenting the process, and so standardizing that timeline and the procedures, looking at how Patty and I communicated to kind of look at research writing knowledge and the qualitative research methods, because I don't think people realize like the good qualitative understanding of research methods that you need to have to write a case study, and really making that case study valid and reliable, just for really good quality case study that can withstand peer review. So it's not easy. It wound up being rather seamless for us, like I said. So I think that we're just gonna run with it and make the handbook and use it as a really great example for what we can give to our future fellows.
I mean, not to say that there were some glitches along the way and some arms throwing up in the air and all that kind of stuff that just happens naturally, but it was a great way to learn from that first go around and have a great outcome for it, and then have all of those things that we were able to learn from it be something that we can present in the future to sort of make those milestones even more secure.
And like I said before, fellows should be presenting it in conferences. They should be the leaders of our performing arts community, and we should be promoting them and their voice and everything that they just learned. So I think this is a really special opportunity to have the expectation that yes, of course you're going to publish and it's going to be peer reviewed, and that's an expectation of our program.
And I will say I was given a lot of freedom to choose what I found interesting. I was the one that was able to choose the patient. It wasn't like, oh, this patient looks really cool, you should have them. I was just like, this seems really interesting, and talk through it with other people. And they're like, yeah, like, let's go for it. There was talk of doing other research opportunities as well. And some of that just kind of fell through with the nature of doing a fellowship amidst a pandemic, and when we were all learning how to live through that. And so I would say there's talk of being open to other research ideas and avenues if someone is really looking forward to something specific. I did feel very supported if I had other ideas that I could pursue them.
Awesome.
I just wanted to sort of go off of what Patty was saying about like the fellow being given an opportunity to do what they were interested in. The reason why we decided to do this was to give a framework if the fellow wanted to do this, and to be able to get something going immediately when they came in. Within that framework, they do have the opportunity to have an idea in mind and have a patient population in mind that they want to look at to sort of form that question that they need to form to make this happen. But I think that we did that just because we didn't want to have other projects that were waiting for someone to, you know, enter data, or, you know, things that were less meaningful, that we had something that was really appropriate for the person and really sort of tailored by their own ideas and their own, interests to be able to participate in that.
All right. Claire and Tiffany, your turn. What opportunities do you guys have for research and how are they structured and what are your expectations?
So we sound pretty similar to Harkness with our three fellows that have completed the program. They have each completed case studies. I think one of the things that is challenging is our program, like many of the other fellowship programs, is only a year long. So by the time you get started in the fellowship, you have to really look at what's feasible as far as a research project to complete within that year. And a case study typically is a feasible learning opportunity for the fellow where they're going to be able to learn something and be able to report something interesting and contribute to the body of knowledge, but also complete it within a year. And it sounds very similar. We worked with our fellows. Usually we have weekly or biweekly meetings. And at the beginning of their fellowship, the first couple months, they were identifying a couple patients that they thought may be interesting. And then eventually it would get tailored down to that one patient who has a really unique case. We also have a few other research projects that are just starting up as far as our dance medicine projects. I mentioned we have a lot of different partners in the community between a professional ballet company, their academy, the OSU Department of Dance, OSU School of Music. Claire actually has a specialty in Irish dance, and we work with our club figure skating team. And so we are starting a handful of different projects that the fellow could always jump in on. We would just need to work together to make sure that it's an IRB that already exists and we could ask a secondary analysis or secondary question that interests that fellow.
Yes, I would add to that. Typically, case studies, like Tiffany said, like everybody else has said so far, are what is feasible and what is interesting to the fellow and provides a meaningful learning opportunity, as well as not just the opportunity to dive deeper into a case, but you also just get the research experience is the word I'm looking for. And you get the opportunity to potentially present a poster and potentially get published. That is one of our goals, as well as it sounds like it is at Harkness that the case is actually publishable. That would be, you know, one of the criteria for the fellowship, that you have a publishable case or other research opportunity. But again, a year is not a long time to pull a big research study together. So those are the options at this point in time, but we are always looking to get more creative and provide more diverse opportunities for our fellows.
All right, Patty, I have another question for you. Going off of research, we know that's really big in the fellowships, but what other opportunities are there for professional growth? And how have these opportunities allowed you to grow in the profession?
Yeah, education was definitely one of the biggest opportunities for growth outside of just clinical growth. Harkness does a great job of partnering with local dance organizations, professional organizations, also with across the country and even across the globe. So I was able to do injury prevention workshops to professional dancers and pre-professional dancers. And I even was able to help create a new injury prevention workshop for a local figure skating group, because another PT and I were working with this young skater, and in talking with her coach, we realized the entire club could use some more resources. So we were able to tailor to what they specifically needed. And so it was really fun to dive a little bit more deeply into the material and just figure out what they needed and support them in a new way. And so then we've been able to take that information and educate our staff even more, and also did a podcast as well. So it's been fun to just really not divulge, but share that knowledge on a wider scale. And then even as a PT, I've presented at conferences and helped create continuing education lectures that have been used for medical providers and just the dance educator community. So that definitely has grown way more than I expected to. I knew I wanted to do education, but when I said I want to do these things, everyone's been super supportive and just helping me do that.
Awesome. And then Claire and Tiffany, did any of your fellows have any similar experiences like the ones that Patty described?
Our fellows do quite a bit of community outreach. For our most recent fellow, that was obviously not quite the experience we had hoped with COVID, but our fellows do on-site coverage with the professional ballet company here in Columbus. They work with the School of Music. They do all kinds of community outreach, and they not only do individual programming and classes for different dance studios, but also develop programs and work with the different dancers on lots of different things like strength and conditioning, nutrition. They've offered joint educational sessions for different groups with some of our nutrition and other colleagues here at Ohio State. Some of our sports psychology colleagues here have done outreach with our fellows. But there are all kinds of different opportunities to shadow and work with physicians, to work with our athletic trainers, to work with our researchers. But I'm sure Tiffany has other opportunities to highlight as well.
Yes, I think maybe one area where I've seen all three of our fellows grow the most is with some of the on-site coverage. All three of our fellows so far have completed an orthopedic residency or had their OCS. So they were not athletic trainers and didn't have the sports specialty background. And so I think when they first started, they were a little hesitant to be on site. And we, through that, learned to really ramp up some of our emergency medical response curriculum as part of that. But they do work on site with athletic trainers. So we have that interdisciplinary collaboration. And by the end of the fellowship, they're covering shows independently with us on call, obviously, and our physicians on call, but they're independent in that nature. So that's a really neat area that I see them be very hesitant and kind of almost scared of at first. And by the end, they're independent. We have some funding to send our fellows to a conference, a national conference, as long as it's in person. Usually it's CSM or IADAMS to help them learn or meet some other of the performing arts professionals in the country and community and collaborate that way as well.
Awesome. Back to you, Patty. Resident to fellow, how has fellowship changed your physical therapy practice?
So I self-studied and took the OCS. I didn't go through a residency before going into the fellowship. And so I had a lot of this book knowledge that I was kind of implementing on my own as best as I could, but it definitely was so different working with mentors through the fellowship to be able to implement so much more knowledge at such a faster rate, because they would help put some of the pieces together or just even give me other ideas that maybe not is in the OCS literature, because dance medicine and performing arts medicine is so specialized. It's not in these broader exams that you're going to be covering. And so I definitely felt like a totally different and hopefully much improved PT at the end of fellowship compared to when I started it. And also just my confidence in those skills was very different. I felt much more comfortable collaborating with their physicians, kind of pre-screening, knowing what they're going to ask me and what they're looking for in terms of communication from us. If they're going to make a call of like, this patient needs an x-ray, or no, they need to go back for an MRI or another opinion. Are we switching from non-surgical to surgical considerations? And so that's definitely one of the biggest ways I've noticed. And even since then, I've still used those tools to continue to grow even on my own. I'm lucky enough to still work with my mentors. And so I still definitely go to them with questions and continue to learn from them to this day.
Awesome. Thank you.
I think that speaks to, it just sort of brings us back around to what we were talking about at the beginning on, you know, what the expectations are as far as what a fellowship does for someone. She just sort of encapsulated what everybody was saying at the beginning of what a practitioner should look like when they finish this program. And it's very humbling, I have to say, to hear her say that, because I haven't sat down and I mean, we had interviews, exit interviews, whatever after, but it's really interesting to hear her say that in her own words, because that's exactly what I would have hoped that she would have gotten by spending a year with us. And I hope that that's what everybody gets from, you know, self-studying for an OCS to then being able to implement all that knowledge and feeling comfortable with it and be able to make all those decisions on her own. I just wanted to say what Tiffany was saying before, as far as it, I think that Harkness is very similar to Ohio State in that we do have a very strong athletic training department here, and that plays a very integral role about how we structure our on-site therapy education and experiences. They are the pros at that. So, you know, I've been doing on-site for a long time, but I learned from them. So, yeah, it's all about integrating all the staff that you have and making all those resources available to make a comprehensive whole program for people to learn from.
Yeah, that's something I've noticed I've been lacking in my residency is I'm craving more on-site training, and there's just no resources for in an orthopedic residency. And it's no fault to the residency itself. It's not one of their goals. So that's awesome that both programs are really pushing for that. And then as we move to wrap up, Mark and Tiffany, do you guys have any pearls of wisdom for our potential applicants into a fellowship program?
Fill out an application. go on PTCAS and get the application. And I think for me, I think that, you know, take a good hard look at what your interest is, and, you know, really let us know what you like, what you like and what you're good at, and what your training, what your dance training and your performing arts training has been, so that we understand where you're coming from as an artist, not just a physical therapist with an OCS or a residency. We need to look at the whole person, and we need to see what kind of fit that, you know, you bring to us and what we can bring to you, and how we can enhance your education and your knowledge and your skills to make you into someone like Patty.
Yeah, and I would just reiterate, if you are considering applying to a program, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Between Mark, myself, Laurel, and Andrea, they're the directors of the two other programs. We all work very closely together and have helped to almost make everybody's program a little bit stronger by collaborating. But we're more than happy to answer any questions and try to really help you make sure that whatever program you're looking at or programs really are going to meet your career goals. And if not, yeah, I'd be more than happy to direct you toward a program that I think would be a better fit. So just reach out with questions. We're all pretty approachable and we want to hear from you.
I second that.
Yes. And as a resident, everyone is super nice and approachable. So reach out if you are interested, because everyone is awesome that I've worked with in setting up this podcast. And they're there to really help grow you in your education and help you be the best PT you can be.
So your future mentors are waiting. Yes. We just need you to apply.
So thank you so much, everybody. It has been a pleasure to host Harkness and Ohio State on this episode. Stay in tune for our next episode, where we will have Columbia and John Hopkins. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great one.
Thank you for listening to PASIG Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.